Hello, this is Dee with the Vermilion County News for July 16, 2018. We'll begin today's reading with the front page story entitled Back on Her Feet. Lab resumes role at veteran's side by Mary Wyckoff, Danville. It didn't take long for Harley to return to her playful, ornery self, even with three legs. She's back to splashing in water, chasing frisbees, and keeping her owner on an even keel. The four-year-old Labrador Retriever has made a quick recovery since being hit by a car on May 18th and is back at the side of veteran Joshua Whitney. Her hair has grown back and her wounds have healed, although she's still regaining her strength. For whatever reason, God's got a plan for us, Whitney said. She's doing awesome. After the accident, Harley underwent surgery at the University of Illinois Veterinary Teaching Hospital. Her right front leg was shattered and needed to be amputated. While Whitney was wringing his hands over his buddy's fate, people in the community were digging deep into their pockets to help owner cover more than $7,000 in expenses. In addition to donations from individuals and organizations, as well as money from Whitney's savings, the Veterinary College also donated about $2,000 from a fund to help low-income owners. Whitney, who served in Iraq with the Army, is especially grateful for the support he's received from the American Legion Dorm Blaster Post 203 in Georgetown and the American Legion Curtis G. Redden Post 210 in Danville. He continues to be touched by the outpouring of help, saying, "I've had folks from all over reach out, and it's been amazing. I wouldn't be where I am today without the help of the American Legion Post 203 and Post 210," he said. "They saved my life and turned around and helped save my partner's life. How cool is that?" Whitney suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder, and Harley has been trained to notice the signs of anxiety and help diffuse stress. Whitney and Harley made an appearance at the recent Working Out PTSD fundraiser at Post 210 to thank people and give an update. Working Out PTSD helps veterans with gym memberships so they can deal with stress through exercise, and now has expanded to raise money to help veterans in other ways, such as buying service dogs. Legion 203 in Georgetown also oversees Mission Canine Warrior to buy and train service dogs for veterans with PTSD and was responsible for pairing Harley and Whitney. At the Working Out PTSD fundraiser, many people stopped to pet Harley as she limped past on three legs, and later applauded Whitney when he finished telling his story. Before he was presented with Harley in February 2017, Whitney said his family was walking on eggshells around him. His wife, Amanda, would worry whether he was having a good day or a bad day. Harley is a huge blessing for Whitney and his family. He said, "She's done so much for me and for my wife and children. Now, when something sets Whitney off, Harley comes up and nudges him." When Whitney went to pick up Harley after her surgery, he was talking to news reporters about his time in Iraq. Even though she was doped up on pain medication, Harley noticed the stress in his voice and jumped up on him to distract him from unpleasant memories. "She's been a lifeline," he said. "She knows when I need her. She's awesome." His children, Brendan, 12, Riley, 10, and Makina, 5, love the dog too, and are protective of her when out in public, telling other children not to pet her because she's working. Harley accompanies Whitney to his job at the Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System, although the slick floors are a bit difficult for her to navigate. She had to learn to plant her good foot to stabilize herself. He said it's been difficult for her to keep up. Whitney plans to find some booties or something to give her more traction. Helping Harley. After Harley's medical expenses were paid through donations, Whitney said about $1,000 was left over. He's in the process of setting up a fund, helping Harley, to help veterans with the cost of veterinary care for their pets. A bank account has been set up, but other details will be announced later on his Facebook page. "We're trying to turn this tragedy into something positive," he said. "There's no reason any veteran should be in my situation." Whitney served as Specialist E4 with the U.S. Army and was deployed to Iraq in 2008-2009 in support of OIF-OEF with the 855th Quartermaster Company. Our next article is entitled Service Dogs Have Veterans' Backs by Mary Wyckoff, Danville. More than once, Carl Crabb has awakened from a nightmare to find big paws on his chest and a tongue licking his face. Sergeant Major Bigfoot is just doing his job, helping the Vietnam War veteran escape the nightmares. I wish I had him 50 years ago, Crabb, a resident of Home Gardens, said of the Doberman Pinscher. Other veterans with service dogs, provided through Mission Canine Warrior, say the canines have been a godsend, helping not only the veterans plagued by post-traumatic stress disorder, but also their families. Nicholas Bukas, speaking of his dog, Lennox, summed it up well. It makes me seem like I'm back in the Marine Corps with one of my brothers at my side, watching my back at all times. The dogs are highly trained to notice the slightest mood changes in a vet and to distract him. Tony Pyatt, owner of Paw a Day Inn Canine Suites in Tilton, spends weeks choosing the perfect dogs and training them through his Midwest Professional Canine Services. David Hughes, service officer with American Legion Dornblaster Post 203 in Georgetown, founded Mission Canine Warrior last year when he learned the average rate of suicide among veterans nationally is about 22 a day. Through fundraisers and donations, Mission Canine Warrior, administrated through the Georgetown American Legion, has helped six veterans and is raising money to help a seventh. Two men received their dogs last year, Joshua Whitney and Zach Hagley. This year, three veterans received their dogs, Crab, Roy Espinoza of Hoopston, and Bukas of Perrysville, Indiana. Another dog is in the process of being trained for Neil Rue of Indiana. A fifth veteran for this year has been chosen, but not enough money has been raised for training. The cost of buying and training a service dog has gone up to $10,000 from $7,500. About $6,500 has been raised for the fifth dog, and about $3,500 is needed. We need to get the dog to the veteran. Sergeant Major Bigfoot is there to comfort Carl Crabb, a Vietnam War veteran, when he has his nightmares. As soon as possible, Hughes said, people may make donations through the Georgetown Legion and its Facebook page. Crabb's daughters are responsible for him being paired with a service dog. They got hold of Hughes and told him that their father was still having nightmares from his days in Vietnam. Crabb was drafted at 19 and served in Vietnam with the Army from October 1966 to November 1967. Combat hurt his hearing, and he also was exposed to Agent Orange. Crabb, 71, welcomed Sergeant Major Bigfoot on April 23rd, and the two are inseparable. The dog stays within 3 feet of Crabb most of the time. He's like one of the family now, he said. The Doberman was especially helpful on the 4th of July, when the sound of certain fireworks reminded him of the guns used in his artillery outfit. That night, Sergeant Major Bigfoot, who sleeps in the bed, jumped on Crabb 3 times between midnight and 5 a.m. Family members are now saying, Dad's a different person. Crabb said as he's calmer, everyone in the family notices the difference. Crabb worked at General Motors 35 years and locked the doors on the last day. Roy Espinoza is all smiles as he receives his service dog, Leo. Also, David Hughes, service officer with the Georgetown American Legion Dornblaster Post 203, which oversees Mission Canine Warrior. Nicholas Bukas and Lennox do everything together. Zach Hagley of Bismarck said of his 3-year-old Shepherd Collie mix, Raven, she's keeping me sane. Raven helps in some way almost every day, whether Hagley is having night terrors or is on the edge of losing his temper. She knows when I'm getting angry and will distract me, he said. She sleeps at the foot of his bed and knows when he starts moving around that he's having nightmares, and she'll wake him up. His family, wife Brittany, and children Raylan 4 and Alex 2 love the pet too, and the kids like to play catch with her. Hagley served as a scout sniper with the Marine Corps, serving from 2009 to 2013 with a tour in Afghanistan. He was discharged as a Lance Corporal, E3. The Roy and Emily Espinoza family in Hoopston is so grateful for Leo, a 3-year-old black lab with a white star on his chest, that they wanted to give back to Mission Canine Warrior. Daughter Lily had a lemonade stand this summer, and with help from Brother Emmett, raised about $250. Espinoza served in the Army from 2003 to 2012. He served in Iraq twice, from 2003 to 2006, and in Afghanistan from 2008 to 2009. He said Leo has helped tremendously with night terrors and anxiety, and he's now able to go more places and be more sociable. Espinoza was the recipient of the Jim Washburn Living Legacy PTSD Service Dog Fund in December, which was created by the Washburn family of Champaign. The family gave $7,500 to the Georgetown American Legion to purchase a service dog. It's a good feeling to know we're making a difference with the veteran and his family, said Emily Close, whose husband Jim Washburn suffered from PTSD. Washburn, a Vietnam veteran who served in the Air Force, took his life on September 26, 2012. Close was present when Espinoza received his dog, saying, "I'm thrilled I got to meet him. They seem like a wonderful family. I feel my husband would be proud of us." While most of the dogs are going to young veterans who served in Iraq or Afghanistan, one has gone to a Vietnam War veteran. Close wants all veterans with PTSD to know it's never too late to get help. Nicholas Bukas, 31, has had Lennox, a 2-year-old German Shepherd, for 2 months. Bukas is a retired Marine Corps corporal with 3 tours of duty, with the main one from March to November 2011. He was awarded the Purple Heart. The dog has helped him in the short time they have been together. They do everything together, including boating, fishing, and golfing. When at home and I get stressed out, he gets my attention and jumps on me, and then tries to get me to play with him. At night, he sleeps against my bedroom door, not allowing it to be opened without me saying it's okay, even if it's my wife coming in and out, he said. Lennox is like an extension of him, Bukas said. Our next article is entitled Black Hawk Statue Secures Funding for Restoration, Oregon. Efforts to restore a 107-year-old statue in northern Illinois has received financial backing this summer from the state and local business. Heavy-duty trailer manufacturing company E.D. Etnier and Company donated $100,000 this week for the Eternal Indian Statue, colloquially known as Black Hawk. The Rockford Register Star reported this. The project in Oregon, Illinois, involves recreating the statue's original mix of concrete and red granite to keep it standing for many more years. "We were wanting to help the community," said Robin Etner, the company's corporate communications specialist. "There was a need, and we were able to assist." Company owner Edward D. Etner was starting the business in 1910 when he furnished artist Laredo Taft with supplies for the 48-foot-tall icon. That's 15 meters tall. "There's been a love affair between the company and statue all these years," said Jan Stilson, local historian and Black Hawk Restoration team member. "It's very gratifying to see them still working together." The State Department of Natural Resources received a $350,000 grant from the State Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity in May. The Black Hawk Restoration Team is also raising funds for the restoration. Efforts to restore the statue have come and gone over the past several decades. The last effort, which began in 2015, came to an abrupt stop in 2016 after the conservator and the engineer couldn't agree over how much of the statue's exterior concrete skin needed to be removed. Our next article is entitled Kankakee Receives Money for Detainees from the Associated Press, Kankakee. Two county jails in Illinois set a record for receiving $959,000 in federal revenue. Kankakee County's jails in May broke its previous 2013 record when it received $957,000 in outside inmate bed rental money. This was reported by the Daily Journal. Nearly all of the money comes from federal agencies. Kankakee County gets $80 daily for each inmate from the feds and $72 from Cook. Bed rental revenue dropped from 2014 to 2016 before trending upward after U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, began housing detainees in the local jails in the fall of 2016. The county has been housing federal inmates since 2004 through a contract with the U.S. Marshals Service. ICE has been the subject of controversy due to President Donald Trump's administration's federal policy of separating children from parents crossing the border, which the president recently ended. Kankakee County's jails detain no one younger than 18. Fred Sayo, a lawyer who advocates for immigrants and refugees, said he's toured the local facilities twice. He said he opposes the national policy of detaining people for immigration violations. They are being charged civilly with a civil infraction. Why should they be in jail? I fundamentally question why they should be there to begin with, Tsao said. He said he has no firsthand reports on any particular complaints about the Kankakee County facilities. Our next article is entitled No Signs Russia is Targeting the Elections from the Associated Press, Philadelphia. The U.S. Homeland Security Secretary said on Saturday there are no signs that Russia is targeting this year's midterm elections with the same scale or scope it targeted the 2016 presidential election. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristen Nielsen spoke at a convention of state secretaries of state, an event that's usually a low-key affair, highlighting voter registration, balloting devices, and election security issues that don't get much public attention. But coming amid fresh allegations into Russia's attempts to sway the 2016 election, the sessions on election security have a higher level of urgency and interest. Nielsen said her agency will help state and local election officials prepare their systems for cyber attacks from Russia or elsewhere. She said U.S. intelligence officials are seeing persistent Russian efforts using social media, sympathetic spokespeople, and other fronts to sow discord and divisiveness amongst the American people, though not necessarily focused on specific politicians or political campaigns. The conference of top state election officials she addressed was sandwiched between Friday's indictments of 12 Russian military intelligence officers alleged to have hacked into Democratic Party and campaign accounts, and Monday's long-awaited meeting between President Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin. Trump has never condemned Russia over meddling in the 2016 election, despite the findings of all top U.S. intelligence agencies, and the Kremlin has insisted it didn't meddle in the U.S. election. In the past, Trump has reiterated Putin's denials, but this week he said he would bring up the issue when they meet on Monday in Finland. All I can say is, did you? Trump said days ago at a news conference in Brussels. And don't do it again. But he may deny it. Some of the state officials who run elections say it's important for Trump, a Republican, to take a tougher stance to avoid having the public's confidence in fair elections undermined. I believe as commander-in-chief, he has an obligation to address it, and frankly put Putin and any other foreign nation that seeks to undermine our democracy on notice that the actions will not be tolerated, California Secretary of State Alex Padilla, a Democrat, said in an interview this week. Some of his peers declined to go that far. I don't go around telling the president what to do, said Jay Ashcroft, the Republican Secretary of State in Missouri. Trump portrays the investigation as a partisan attack But not all Republicans see it that way. This month, the Republicans and Democrats on the U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee backed the findings of an assessment from U.S. intelligence agencies that Russia tried to interfere in the 2016 election and acted in favor of Trump and against his Democratic opponent, Hillary Clinton. As part of that effort, Russian hackers targeted at least 21 states ahead of the election and are believed to have breached the voter registration system in at least one, Illinois, investigators say. Without naming the state, Friday's indictment said the Russian intelligence officers stole information on about 500,000 voters from the website of one board of elections, a breach undetected for 3 weeks. There's no evidence results were altered, but the attempts prompted the federal government and states to re-examine election systems and tighten their cybersecurity. Federal officials also say it's possible that malware might have been planted that could tamper with voting or paralyze computer systems in future elections. The election officials talked about technical details of blocking and incursion. Washington Secretary of State Kim Wyman, a Republican, told her peers how her state is using its National Guard to help test and shore up cybersecurity for elections. She said it's important to make it clear to voters that the military is not running elections and does not have access to election data. The whole idea of this is to instill confidence in voters and the public that the system is secure. This is what Wyman said in an interview. Some state officials also said Homeland Security is becoming more helpful in sharing information. On Friday, a federal grand jury indicted the 12 Russian intelligence officers on charges they hacked into Democratic campaign networks in 2016 and then stole and released tens of thousands of documents. The indictment says one of the intrusions came that summer on a vendor whose software is used to verify voter registration information. The indictment references a spoof email it says the Russian agents sent to more than 100 election managing customers of the vendor to try to get more information. The indictments tell us that no longer can we deny in any shape or form that Russians were involved, said cybersecurity expert Sam Woolley of the Institute for the Future in Palo Alto, California. And now we'll turn to our obituaries. The first is John N. Woodrow, 93, of Covington, passed away at 11:30 p.m. on July 12, 2018. Services will be held at Covington Sunset Chapel on Wednesday, July 18, 2018. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m., with funeral service following at 11 a.m. Ryan Sowers will conduct the service. He will be laid to rest beside his wife in Mount Hope Cemetery in Covington. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Judith A. Woodrow Memorial Scholarship with the Covington Community Foundation. Next, Paul Michael Monson, 71, of Danville, passed away on Friday, July 13, 2018, at VA Ileana Healthcare. A service to celebrate the life of Paul Monson will be held at 7 p.m. Tuesday, July 17, 2018, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Pastor Parker Booth will officiate. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. prior to the services, also at Sunset in Danville. Cremation rites will follow. Burial will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, July 18, 2018, at Danville National Cemetery, where American Legion Post Number 210 will perform military honors. Next, Paulette H. Eaton, 71, of Danville, passed away at 4:29 p.m. Thursday, July 12, 2018, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. A celebration of Paulette's life will be at 4 p.m. Sunday, July 15, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street, Danville. Drew Metzner will officiate. A visitation will be 2 to 4 p.m. prior to the service. Memorial donations may be given in her name to the City of Danville Police K-9 Fund, 2 South Street, Danville, Illinois, 61832, or the Champaign-Urbana Autism Network, Post Office Box 107, Savoy, Illinois, 61874. Next, Muriel Lynn Jordan Mullins, 81 of Danville, entered our father's house at 12:15 a.m. Thursday, July 12, 2018, at Colonial Manor. Visitation will be 6 to 8 p.m. Central Daylight Time, Monday, today, July 16th, at First Presbyterian Church, 100 North Franklin Street, Danville, and at 10 to 11 a.m. Central Daylight Time, Tuesday, July 17th, at the church. Funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Central Daylight Time Tuesday at the church with Reverend Ann Schwartz officiating. Interment will follow at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Memorial contributions may be made to the First Presbyterian Church. Next, Ruby Charlene Sanders, 85, passed this life on Wednesday, July 11th, 2018. A homegoing celebration will commence at noon Wednesday, July 18, 2018, at Church of the Apostolic Authority, 400 West Bradley Avenue, Champaign. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. until the time of the service. Officiating, Suffragan Bishop Edward T. McGee. Interment will be at the Danville National Cemetery on Thursday, July 19, 2018. And here's a bit of local news from Piatt County. Danville native to serve as assessor, Monticello. A woman with 9 years of experience in the McLean County Assessor's Office has been hired as Piatt County's new supervisor of assessments. Jennifer Bryant, a deputy assessor in the McLean office, came highly recommended by officials there, said County Board Chairman Al Manett. They've got a lot of ground to cover up there in McLean, so I think she will be able to handle this. Bryant grew up in Danville and graduated from Danville High in 1996. Her vocational life has also included a decade as a groomer and assistant in a veterinary office. My first thought is just to acclimate myself to the office and see how they run things here. Things seem to be running pretty smooth, Bryant said. It would be nice, maybe later on, to implement some more technology to the office. She takes over for Sandy Schloss, who served as assessor for both DeWitt and Piatt counties for about a year before stepping down effective July 1st. She was thought to be Illinois' first bi-county assessor, but Schlosser said new data entry requirements from the state made it too much of a workload for one administrator. Bryant's contract includes a starting annual salary of $58,000 and runs through November 2022. She said she and her husband, who owns his own business, may look to relocate closer to Piatt County next summer. Besides Bryant, the Piatt Assessor's Office has two employees. Garden Chair, OSF Healthcare Sacred Heart Medical Center and Faith in Action seek donations to keep fresh produce on the table for Vermilion County seniors. Faith in Action's Garden Share program provides fresh produce for seniors. Each week, seniors can take home a free bag of produce and enjoy samples of recipes provided by OSF Healthcare Sacred Heart Medical Center dietary services and interns. Donations of excess produce can be dropped off Monday to Friday, 8 to 4 p.m. at CRIS Healthy Aging Center, 309 North Franklin Street, Danville, or 8 to 1 p.m. at the Georgetown Township Building, 1805 North Main Street, Georgetown. Seniors can pick up produce every Wednesday through September 26th from 1 to 2 p.m. at Chris Healthy Aging Center in Danville, and 10 to 11 a.m. at the Georgetown Township Building. Volunteers are needed to distribute produce and nutrition. Please call 217-431-8489 to volunteer. This has been Dee with the Vermilion County News for July 16, 2018. I hope you have a great day, and I look forward to reading with you again soon.